Then he bowled up.
Remember last time we covered up to, almost up to when, after Joe died and you moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But before we get back into when you rejoined the party in 36, I thought what we should do today is talk more about the children. And then up to when you rejoined the party in 36. Because
yeah.
I think that there's some very important things, both as a radical mother who became a socialist and joined the Communist Party from the very beginning, the fact that you have such a well-known communist daughter, that knowing more about the children, I think, would be very important.
Okay.
So what I want to start with, though, and last time, you talked about having had the 13 abortions. And I wanted to first find out more about that, because the children were fairly well spaced. I mean, Bernard was born in 1909.
The first three, but see, before Bernard, I had a little girl who died when she was only 4 years and 7 months.
Now, was she the first pregnant?
She was the first one.
And then the second was when?
It was Bernard. And then was Frances.
You didn't get pregnant in between?
No, because, you know, there was only... Helen was only 2 years and 7 months when the third one was born.
Oh, I see.
You see? And then afterward, I began to have just the horror, you know, of just being a kind of a breeding machine. And so I said to Joe, what do we have to transmit to children that's so remarkable that we have to bring so many to the world? It's really ridiculous. And... we have no money, it's very hard, and I think it's better for them to have an opportunity to get the kind of an education and understanding in the world than, and I had spoken to Rabbi Kavar there, who was a conservative, but not a rigid one, and I said, what do you think of birth control and everything? He says, well, I'll tell you a very simple explanation. When you have a chicken coop, and you only have room for 6 chickens, don't try to crowd 12 into it, because none of them will do well. So just limit it. Well, wasn't I so? Anyway, of course, I never told him what I did, because what I did was really dangerous.
Well, then what did you then do, Barbara? Because you said you had tried the pessary, didn't work.
Yeah, that's right. We tried all kinds of, it didn't work. So the doctor had told me that some do, he wouldn't recommend it, and he wouldn't do it. And he was a Hungarian and a friend of ours. But they use a catheter. It's rubber ripping, and they poke it up and break this finger in the uterus. The membrane that protects it, you puncture through it, and therefore the contents will come. Now, it's very dangerous, he said, because it's very easy to get blood poison. I had three friends, who went to a doctor and had it done, and every one of them died. And I did it ignorantly because I knew very little of sanitation. I stuck it in a hot water and that's all.
And where did you get the catheter?
At the drugstore.
Well, how long was it? What was it usually used for?
It was usually used for anything that you needed to puncture through that wasn't dangerous, you know, but not for anything like that.
How long was it, do you recall?
It was about, I would say, between 8 and 10 inches long and everything. But there was only once, you know, when I almost died that time because I got convulsions and... I had almost 105 fever, and the convulsions I still remember to this day. It's a horrible feeling. Every 4 minutes they had to change the sheets they were ringing with, and when you feel that coming, that rigid thing, you know, that it's a horrible feeling. I think the convulsions is the thing I remember. And that was when I was taken to that Catholic hospital where when the doctor, the Catholic doctor, I told you about that.
No.
The Catholic, when I was taken to the hospital, they thought they would have to operate right away because my fever was so high. When I came, the doctor came in to see me, and he said, you know, when you first came in, we thought we'd have to operate right away, but it seems to me there's just a little bit lightening of that your color isn't quite, because I had turned as black as a chocolate block. And
had you actually aborted the fetus by then or not?
Yes, it had aborted, but there was a retained something that would cause the bleeding, and it caused the high fever and everything. So the doctor said, you see, this is a Catholic hospital, and the Mother Superior feels what you've done is nothing short of murder. I said, and I was so angry when I heard that. As sick as I was, I sat right up in bed with my face just saying, murder, you say? These hypocrites. They didn't say anything when millions were killed, children and everything, to make money, to make millions for some lice. They didn't think anything of that. But if I refuse to have any more common father, they think that's murder. These stinking hypocrites, that's what they are. So, you know, he said, look, calm yourself. You're going to have a hemorrhage if you don't. And suddenly there was a loud noise, just like a gun going off. He said, what's that? I said, I don't know. But you see, in my anger, the pressure of that blood pressure had sent that membrane, that is the thing, and it came out like a bullet. It came out of me, and my blood pressure and everything went right down. The fever departed like. He said, you know, I have practiced 25 years. I have never experienced a thing like this. This is a miracle. I said, a miracle happening to a murderer and an atheist? He says, oh, now, say, look. But, you know, he reported this whole conversation to the Mother Superior. And she came in the next day, and she put her arms around me and said, don't you know, dear, that what we want is to have you keep your health, to take care of your children. That's what we're concerned with. Just your health. Very nice. And then Dorothy was 6 years old at that time. She had asked if she could have dinner at the hospital because I said I didn't want care for the food. I didn't want to eat. I had no appetite. She says, well, could I eat it so I can tell all the children at school that I ate at the hospital? So I said, sister, will you let my little girl eat my dinner? You know I don't care for it. And she thinks it would be just great fun. She said, you eat your dinner. We insist on it. So you feel better.
I put them over there, Dorothy. The glasses? Oh, no, I wasn't going to get one. I'm looking for the
bathroom. Here, sir. You better take that. And, you know, they brought a tray for Dorothy. The little Miss Dorothy, the guest of the Mercy Hospital. All the things a child would like and everything. And you can't imagine how lovely they were to me. They didn't want me to go out of that hospital feeling that they were a bunch of vampires who didn't care about life. Yeah.
Well, Barbara, this wasn't the first time that you did the...
No. This was about the third or fourth time.
Well, when you would use the catheter, did you do this all yourself or did someone help you?
Did it help me?
Would someone help you to do the abortion or do it yourself?
I did it all myself.
And what, like the first time, you just went to the drugstore and bought the...
catheter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rubber tiled, you know, the rubber is all around it. Otherwise, it's just like a big needle, you know. And I was so desperate about it. And just the thought of being pregnant again right away, you know.
When was the first time that you tried abortion?
The first time I did was when Frances, I think, was about a year old. And I already, but I missed just 2 days I knew it, and then I became so desperate, and the doctor, as I told you, was a friend of ours. He said, look, I don't dare to do it. It's against the law. I can't do it, and everything, and it's dangerous. I said, what can I do? He said, well, I'll tell you what, but I wouldn't recommend it. He said, it's as dangerous to do it. But that's the way some of you have been have done it.
And then how would you do it?
I would put it in through the vagina until you feel. See, when you break that, whatever it is, that membrane or whatever it is, when you break that, it's really very painful for us. But it only lasts a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then in a little while the blood begins to come. And, you know, if you've opened it enough, sometimes I had to do it 2 or 3 times before it was opened enough, you know. But I did.
And how quickly would you finally abort the fetus? How long?
Well, generally, see, there was only one time, Sammy, that really made me a little bit sick. And this was about the third time I had done it, because when it began to come, little hands and little feet began to come, so I knew it was forming. See, before it was only blood, nothing else. But this must have been going on after I had done it. It still had been going on until I finally, that I said two, three times that I had to do it. And when I saw that, it made me kind of sick. But someone once asked me, didn't you ever have a feeling of regret or remorse about doing it? I said, never. I lost my oldest little girl who was, I never got over it. To this day, it's over. Over 50 years, and I still think of her. She was really a remarkable little girl. All the things I dreamt of and wanted to be and everything she had in her. A compassion, a love for reading and learning. She heard her voice once and never forgot it. She was really remarkable.
Well, Barbara, how many times did you get pregnant then between... The first time you did it was between when Frances was born and Dorothy was born.
Yes.
Right? And Dorothy. How many times
Dorothy was born after my little girl died.
Yeah, but how many times did you get pregnant between when Frances was born and when Dorothy was born?
About twice. Two or three times.
And then?
It was only after Helen died that I didn't abort Dorothy.
I see.
And I think Dorothy was all that almost saved my life, because after Helen died, although I still had the two children, Bernard and Frances, but I felt life wasn't worth living without Helen.
Oh, so the first two times that you did the abortion, Helen was still alive.
Yes.
And then after she died, then Dorothy was born.
Yes.
You decided to go ahead and have the next baby.
Yes.
And then the rest of them were between when Dorothy was born and when Carol Jean was born.
Yes, that's right. I can never understand how Carol Jean, that I didn't do anything. And Carol Jean says, I'm so glad you didn't deport me.
Well,
that I'm here.
You decided to go ahead and have
I don't know why. I just can't explain it myself. Because, you know, I had had so many before, had 13 before. And yet I didn't do anything with her, and I was almost 41 when she was born. I was 40, but two months after she was born, I was 41. And,
Barbara, after you would insert the catheter, would you then go to bed for a while and wait?
No.
To expel?
Never went to bed, never anything. There was only one time when there was a natural miscarriage, and it was twins, and that I had done nothing. I had been chopping some wood out there, and suddenly I felt, and that was the only time that it came naturally. And then it would have been twins. My mother was a twin.
Oh.
But I'm saying,
the doctor had never told you to try ergot. You never tried that.
Yes, I did.
Oh.
Yes, I tried ergot. Didn't do me one bit of good. Very bitter.
So the only thing that worked was actually...
Yeah, that's right. That's it. No, I tried ergot.
Did you try anything else before using the catheter, do you recall?
No. You had gotten from the druggist, you know, some kind of a thing there's a kind of a greasy, like a capsule. It would spread over the uterus and didn't allow... But it didn't make any difference.
Only once did you have to go to the hospital, though?
Only once did I go to the hospital. 6 years old at the time, yes, 1920. Because she was born in 1914, September the 22nd.
Now, how long after you had tried to do the abortion did you have to go to the hospital?
Well, that one was when I went to the hospital, I was already 36 years old. That was the one before the last time that happened. And yet I tried it once again in spite of that.
When was that then?
After when I almost died, about 2 years later.
You were certainly fertile.
Yes, oh gosh, yes.
Now, you never thought of asking a friend to try and help you or be with
you? I asked the doctor. And my friend, one of the friends, he was also in the family, but they were the wealthy ones in the family. We were the poor family. They were the very wealthy ones. She went to a doctor, a specialist type of them, and she died. She had two children, and she didn't want any more. Mm-hmm. And she went to a specialist, because they had plenty of money, and she died. And then one who was not a close friend, but I knew her and everything, and she was about my age and everything, she went to a hospital and had it done, but she died.
Well, Barbara, was it a matter of money? Had you been able to afford it? Would you think some doctor would have done it for you?
I don't know. It was pretty hard to get a doctor who would do it because they were afraid the penalties were so severe. And for a doctor to have his license taken away from him was very, mm-hmm. well, it was just terrible. So I don't know because they evidently went to someone that they could get to do it, you know. Of course, you see, there were all these modifications. If your health was threatened, if something, you know, was abnormal or anything, and always they found out, these people couldn't have gotten that either. Nobody would do it just to, so what reason they gave or what reason there may have been, I don't know, but they died.
Hmm.
And we knew one of our closest friends, a woman 29 years old, she's the one that taught us some of the most obscene Jewish songs, you know. And she was delighted. She was 29, a beautiful woman. She had three children. Her husband was a furrier. They came from San Antonio, and they came to us. I don't know why it was to my mother, you know, for Hungarian. And she had the three children. He had tuberculosis. So when she found out she was pregnant, she went to a doctor and he gave her something, and I don't know what she did, but suddenly she began to hemorrhage, and she had stayed at our home, crowding up her, we had very little room, and everything, and we went there every day, my mother and I, and to take care of the children and everything. And she loved those children devotedly. She didn't love her husband very much, but he wasn't a very lovable guy. So, she was taken to the St. Anthony's Hospital, very, very ill. She, too, had turned her face all dark. And the next day, they found her dead in bed, with holding the telephone or something in her hand, and the blood had come from her, and she couldn't expel it, so she choked on her own blood. And she was 29, a beautiful woman.
Well, Barbara, was the only hospital in Denver a Catholic hospital? How did you end up going to a Catholic hospital when you...
Well, in the first place, I had gone... when we first went, my doctor, there's a woman doctor, had taken me to a little hospital, and some friends of ours, he was a lawyer and a very close friend, and his wife, too, was a very close friend. They said, you're not staying in this rat of a hospital. So he insisted... Mercy Hospital was the finest hospital in Denver. And they had a lot of money. So so he took me in his car and took me to Mercy Hospital.
Now, the doctor who refused to do the abortion was a woman?
She didn't refuse to do it. She didn't know how. She was scared to death that I would die. She's the one that said that I had to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And... But they...
after you tried doing it, what happened? How long was it before she had to put you in the hospital?
Well, it was just a few days afterward.
Were you in bed the whole time?
Well, I was only in bed the last few days. And that was when I had the convulsions. And that scared her. Mm-hmm. And the high fever mounting, it had gone up to 105. And everyone said that if it goes beyond 105, you'd die. And she became very frightened.
She knew what you had done?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Now, was Joe home at this time?
Yes, he was home at that time.
How did he feel about it?
He felt pretty terrible. But you see, he would never take precautions. The condom, he hated it and everything. And afterward, you know, I said, well, I said, you have to use it, and that's all there is to it, you know. You don't want me to go through all this again, you know. Well, he did, he was pretty scared of it. But I did.
But at least it was another, it was a couple more years, though, actually. You didn't get as pregnant quite as often.
Yes, I did. 13, you know, but after all, yeah, I did. I don't know why. And especially, you see, it just seems like a crazy thing to say. The sex didn't really mean very much to me. One thing when you're afraid of anything, but because of me. And my husband, Dorothy's father, was a very passionate man. If I just passed him once and felt kind of ashamed that I showed so little affection, and if I just say it's something nice to him, he was already, you know. So he was a very, very passionate guy. And it really turned me against it, in a way.
Because of the fear of pregnancy.
That's right. So that... Now I can see that it was a cruel thing. You see, he was naturally a passionate person, and I had really very little sympathy with it. I can feel very, very sorry, because really I knew very little of sex. You don't know anyone who was as ignorant as I was. The only thing I'd ever read was the same rich family that I told you that one of the daughters-in-law died, that one of them, who was a kind of a chenille, but he went to the university, he gave me a book of nature. And then I read for the first time, I read about something about sex and how just amazed the life out of me, and I was almost 20. Never knew a thing about it. See, when I first had the menses, I was 12 and a half years old. I never heard about it. I didn't know a thing about it. I thought I was dying. I thought I had sat somewhere and had cut myself without knowing. And I thought, well, did I play jacks? But this was winter time. You don't play jacks winter time. I couldn't. But I was ashamed to tell my mother. But I felt sure I was dying. And I'd go outside to the toilet to... With that cold water from the running back, I would wash, you know, from the blood and everything. I didn't know what to do. So finally my mother saw I wouldn't eat or anything, and I was very pale. She said, what's the matter with you? What hurts you? I said, then I burst into her. I said, Mama, I'm dying. She's dying? What do you mean you're dying? I said, I am. And she said, why do you think you're dying? I said, Mama, I can't stop the bleeding. And I don't remember where I sat. I didn't remember anything at all, but I can't stop it, and the blood won't stop. So at first, you know, she was tired, and she said, oh, no, never mind, don't know. That isn't it. She said, everyone gets it. You're kind of young, you're 12 and a half, but many of them, she said, I was almost 13, she said, but that isn't much different.
But she didn't explain what it was all about.
No,
She
told me not to worry. Told me not to worry, but every girl gets it. And everything. And then the first time I really read about how it happens and everything was this book of nature that Jay Goldhammer gave me.
Well, Barbara, had Joe ever tried using the condom?
Well, he did after this happened. He did then. Now, at first he would never do it. But he did after this happened.
But even once he started using the condom, you became pregnant two more times, though, didn't you? One other abortion, and then...
I've always thought that it was when he came home from one of his trips, you know, unexpectedly, and he didn't have a condom and everything. So when he died, Bonide found some condoms in his... So he thought he'd gone, you know... Yeah, and Bonide, you know, who is very, he also was of a very passionate nature. He said to me, I suppose you would have thought less of him. I said, Bonide, I wouldn't have cared one bit. I wouldn't have thought. He said, I don't believe it.
Well, do you think he had been?
I think, well, what did he have the condoms there for, if not?
Did he carry with him when he traveled, you mean?
Yeah, what else would he have them for? yet I would have the, see what surprised me, he was awfully afraid of a disease. And I, the only thing that I know that he was very careful of, that he wouldn't, no matter what, he was afraid because he had, he knew, I think, two young men who had contracted it, and he thought it was the most horrible thing there was. So that would have been the only thing that would have kept him, what they used to call faithful to one.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't believe it was that important?
No, I don't think I really did. No, I don't think I did. Because I wouldn't have felt deprived of anything that I didn't want.
Mm-hmm. So the whole fear of pregnancy really so much played a part of your, and it must have been a very important
see,
part.
Well, you see, my mother, I had a baby every 2 years. See, her first one died, and then she had my brother, and then after my brother, she, for 6 years, she didn't have any children, and she didn't really care. And suddenly, when my brother was 6 years and 3 months or something, I came. And after that, she had one every 2 years. And I had to stay home from school to help in the house, wash the bloody clothes and everything, because a pious tree is not supposed to touch it. And I had to be home for all the things. So pregnancy was always associated with my mind.
It sounds like you said pregnancy was associated with what?
Pregnancy was associated, with, in my mind, with only having too many damn kids. And, you know, you see, the sad thing is, Sandra, that I love those children.
Mm-hmm.
I really took care of them. My sister, 2 years younger than I, said to me, and this is just several years ago, didn't you ever ask yourself why none of the babies wanted to come to me and always went to you? I said, no, I never thought of asking myself, why did they? She said, because I didn't want to do like you did, to get up at night and help take care of them, and I'll have to do. So I used to pinch them so they'd hate me. I said, I don't believe it. She said, it's the truth. I really still don't believe it, because I've never seen anything in her that warned me. But she said she did. She said she didn't want that. She didn't want to take care of them. My mother had children, let her take care of them. And she said, but I really love the children, you know.
Well, Barbara, is there any way that you think that your own radicalism and beliefs affected how you brought your children up?
Yes, I think very much so, yes.
In what way?
Because, you see, when I became radical myself, I thought that people who were not aware of these things, who didn't know this, and then I sang, I loved the songs of protest and everything, and I said, they heard these songs all the time. They had to know what was going on in the world. To be ignorant of it was not, when they would say that anyone who was innocent, I said, you mean ignorant, and to be ignorant is not a virtue. I don't know what you mean by the word innocent. But not to be aware of anything is to be ignorant of it, not because you were innocent or because you carried innocence. They used to think you don't talk about sex because you should be keep on being innocent. I said, that's only because you if you continue to be ignorant, and I don't think that's a virtue. And so whatever happened, the wars or anything else, I would talk, we'd talk about it and see what was happening and why. And then when we talked about anti-Semitism, why it happened, I said, you see what is very strange, that the Catholics took this Jew, he was a Jew, and in the name of that Jew, they made them hate all the other Jews, which is ridiculous. It showed no logic or common sense, because according to the New Testament, Jesus was born a Jew, he lived a Jew, he died a Jew. So, and yet, with that, but you see, logic and common sense or anything else has nothing to do with prejudice. They can, for what purpose they did it, they helped them. And they had no they killed their own, didn't they? When the St. Bartholomew's of Jews, didn't the open. My son once said to me, there was a doctor in his home, and when he said, I want to tell you my mother, she thinks there's only three kinds of people, those who already are, those who may become, and those who aren't worth a damn.
Well, Barbara, how involved were the children in...
They were involved.
Party? Were most of their friends children of other radicals?
No, not necessarily. That's the funny thing. No, their friends were still, the ones they had at school or anything. Even Dorothy, who was the most close to it, their friends were the schoolmates and everything. But whatever they did was to go on picket lines or to stand up in class and explain what was happening, and everything, because even the teacher didn't know very much about it. And I remember when Spain was invaded, that Carol Sheen would come bring literature to the teachers down here not very far from here. The teachers didn't know, and they said, look, isn't it? And I would send them literature, and then I made friends with all their teachers and got to know them. And they said, but look, isn't it strange that you've always thought of the loyalists who were the ones who were loyal to the traditions and to the establishment, and here, the loyalists, I said, well, you see, there's a different thing now going down. This government has been elected by the people, and Roosevelt should have been supporting it, and this is the thing to get a black mark against him, because this government was a legal government instituted by the people, and yet he stuck the ships was going with to help them, and yet Italy and Germany got all the guns they wanted and everything else, from the Canary Islands and Franco came. And yet Roosevelt did not help the revolutionaries. And yet he knows that in Santa Maria, when the Germans came and bombed, those people, men, women, and little children, bombed. And we did nothing about it. And when we sent an ambassador to Germany, when Professor Dodd, his daughter wrote a book through embassy eyes exposing what was happening in Germany, and Professor Dodd, who was an honest guy, tendered his resignation to Roosevelt, saying he no longer could stay there because he no longer could represent his government in a so corrupt, so hideous things that are happening in Germany. Roosevelt appointed a career diplomat, Wilson, Hugo Wilson, to take the place of, and he still supported Hitler, because if the United States had never supported Hitler, Hitler couldn't have come to first base.
Well, how would they? You would tell the teachers this.
Yes.
And how would they respond?
They were horrified, because they thought of Roosevelt as a radical. I said, yes, but don't forget, in some respect, he is a more educated man and has perhaps more feeling. He's a better politician than there, but he comes from the aristocracy, and that's awfully hard to forget. His loyalty is to them and not to anything else. I said, look, when millions of people were against what was happening in Spain, but the Catholic Church supported it, and he didn't lose the vote of the Catholic Church. So he went along.
Well, Barbara, you once mentioned, this is a little later, this is when you were in Los Angeles that we're talking about now, that Carol Jean had a friend, the O'Hares, was it?
Yes.
Who, because of your politics, they didn't want Carol Jean to...
Well, they were very nice to Carol Jean, but they said if they wanted to know how not to vote, they found out how we were going to vote, and they would vote against anything that we were for. But nevertheless, they took her to, she went to Mass, Christmas Mass with them,
They didn't object to the children playing with
oh,
them.
Oh, no, never.
Did you ever?
Mrs. Hare was a very nice woman. When Carol Jean was sick, she brought over all kinds of things for her.
Did you ever have any problems of neighbors or other children refusing to associate?
No. Only once here in with Richard, the people who lived here on the corner, he was their clerk in the bank, and they had two boys. One boy who was 2 years older than Ricky, and then a little boy who was about, who was just very young, only about 3 years old. And this boy, when he got angry at Ricky, he said to him, "Your mother is trying to overthrow the government." He says, "You're a damned liar. My mother is there because she's trying to make a decent work for you and me and everything."
Of course, he was in prison.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And then, and Ricky at that time was just about 5 years old. And he, and everything. So then the little boy, he was 7 or 8 years old. He tried to hit the Ricky, and when I saw it, I was out there sweeping the sidewalk. I picked up my broom and ran after him, and I was going to hit him. And I came clear up to the house where his father came to bed. He said, "What is this?" I said, "Well, your boy was hitting my grandson." And everything for no reason at all, and he's 2 years older, so I was just going to give him a good whang, too. He said, "Why were you doing this?" Now, he's up in his name now. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry." He said, "Apologize to the lady." "Well, what do I care about his apology?" I said, "Well, I'm not concerned so much about your apology, but if you ever dare hit him again, believe me, I'll whack you good old myself."
But with your own children, when they were younger, you never had, the children never had problems.
No, no. As a matter of fact, I talked to all my neighbors and brought them all to socialist literature and thought I was, that's one of the things I did do. I talked to all of them and brought, I said, "Look, this is the thing. Are you for this? Are you for this? This is what's happening. Why don't you read about it?" "No." Mm-hmm. The only way, and then when they would say, "No, they don't want," I said, "But look, you're not even true to the Constitution, to the men who framed the Constitution, because Jefferson said eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. How can you be vigilant if you don't know what's going on? You're not even true to that. How can you support the Constitution if you don't know what they're going to try to destroy the Constitution?" And I can't remember that anyone ever, the only thing was the mother of this, the boy that hit the, you know, when Ellen, when I tried to tell her, have her read the National Guardian, mm-hmm. I said, "Ellen, you've got two boys. Do you want the war to come and you might lose them? Don't you want to know what's going on?" She says, "No. Mm-hmm. If my government sends them, then that's it. And I don't want to know anything about it."
Well, Barbara, when the children were young, for instance, when Bernard was, he was 6 when you joined the Socialist Party, and he was 10 when the Communist Party started. Were there, and he was 10 when you lived together in that colony.
Yeah.
Were there groups or study groups for the children that he and Francis would go to?
Well, the only thing they tried to form was a Sunday school where they were teaching, but really they did a very inadequate job, because most of those that were teaching, myself including, knew very little how to teach. Mm-hmm. And everything. Most of you would say to them, like, "Look, even in the animals, do you think they would permit one animal to hog all the food while they went out starving? And yet we as human beings are supposed to think we permit it, but the animals didn't put up with it for 1 minute. Why do we do it? Because we don't understand, because we're ignorant, and because they give us laws that there's laws of property, this belongs to them. Why does it belong to them? They didn't tend all the fields or anything else, so we have to know why.
So how long did this Sunday school for the children last?
I think that altogether it lasted about, as far as I can remember, about 6 or 8 months.
Oh, that's all?
That's all.
And there was never anything
else? It was in the Jewish neighborhood, and most of them that came were Jews. There was a few who weren't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the teacher, who was one of the best teachers, and in some ways a corrupt guy, and his wife, who had been a teacher too, he was the best teacher of Marxism that I ever met. And yet, in many ways, he was a corrupt guy. He was very nice to me because I knew a lot of people. I had been born. Dr. Hannon. Now, when I found out, we thought that he was just one of those nature doctors. Mm-hmm. But he was really a medical man. When I read about how he died just about 2 or 3 years ago, about 5 years ago, in the medical journal, Dr. Francis Hannon, now 81, and that would have been same thing.
It was just that one brief period that there was ever an attempt at some sort of study group or anything for the children.
Well, you see, that's true. That was only the one thing. But you see, at that time, in the Socialist Party, they had things that I thought was far better than in the Communist Party. The little blue books from Chicago that came by the, who was it, put them on, all about what socialism is and what capitalism is. In simple terms, I thought that nothing ever was as excellent as that. I didn't think that the Communists ever did as excellent a job as the Socialists.
Well, would the children read those?
Yes, they could read them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they could read them.
Well, and then
and the songs, too. They all loved the songs.
Oh.
And I would sing. See, I would sing those songs to them, the songs of the revolt, the International, the songs of the revolt. And they loved all of those songs. They knew them. You see, when Dorothy was arrested, when she was not quite 14, and I went to see her at the juvenile hall, and when I came, those women in charge of it were something like the settlement ladies of, and they said, "Do you know what your little daughter is doing?" I said, "Well, tell me, what is she doing?" So she's trying to convert them to socialism. I said, "Well, is that bad?" "Well, it's not the thing that we're teaching here." She said, "You know, as we came up the steps, the children were singing at the top of their voice, the prisoners of starvation and the red flag and everything." And she told them all about socialism and told them they ought to belong to, they ought to understand.